recap.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Thanks for joining us, SB Nation AM, SB Nation Radio. I open this hour giving a shout-out to Cubs General Manager, or President of Baseball Operations, as he likes to be called, Theo Epstein. Addison Russell, who has been suspended 40 games for violating the league's domestic violence policy, that is up on Thursday. He is in AAA baseball. And Epstein talked about it, but one of the things that he said was that there were reports that the Cubs were threatening media members for the critical cover, being critical of the coverage of this story. And Epstein wanted to put that to bed. So this is what he said in addressing that. And I got to give him credit for this, because this is well said, like you would expect Theo Epstein, an Ivy League graduate and a longtime presence now in the front office of Major League Baseball, guiding two dormant franchises to World Series championships in the Red Sox and the Cubs. He wrote, if you want to write critical articles about Addison or about the club's handling, you're more than welcome to. We believe in the freedom of the press, and this is an issue where we expect there to be strong opinions. People have their right to have those opinions and express them however they want. We would never try to stifle freedom of the press. That threat of reprisal is to a media member about any topic, especially one of this nature, is not acceptable. I would be surprised if that happened with the Cubs, and if it did, I'd want to know who it is, and they wouldn't be working for the Cubs much longer. That's a fireable offense. That's a great statement by Epstein, because when you have a situation now with athletes, and we see this with Tyreek Hill and now Addison Russell, well, whoever it is, it doesn't matter. When you have domestic violence with an athlete, and then he goes through the process of staying employed with whatever club he's with, right? If it's Tyreek Hill, if it's Addison Russell, it could be anybody, Greg Hardy, whatever. There's going to be people with strong opinions about this. And there's going to be people who are going to say, you know what? Forget the business side of this. I don't want him on the team, or I think they're handling this wrong. They should be ashamed of themselves, et cetera, et cetera. Epstein is saying, look, you write that. You write that. Because the issue of domestic violence is important enough for you to express your opinion on it. And if you feel like our organization is threatening you with limited access or whatever, let me know, because I'll fire that person. Good job, Theo.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation AM, SB Nation Radio. Ron, yesterday I went to go play golf for the first time this season. So I've been waiting all winter to go play golf. And here's the thing. I had a shoulder injury a year and a half ago. My doctor said, you ain't playing golf for a while until you get that rehab. So I had to work on exercises and things like that. And then I got busy. I moved from New Jersey back to Nashville, and, you know, things occur, and I hadn't been able to play. So yesterday I said, you know what? I'm going to go out and play. And I was very excited. It was a beautiful day. It was not too hot. It was windy, but not too windy. Went out to this golf course. Place was empty. It was fantastic. I was like, oh, I was going to play by myself. So all my friends work during the day. But it was great. Like, the first tee was wide open. Like, you could tell, like, as soon as you got to the course, like, nobody was in the parking lot. Course was desolate. No one was on the first tee. No one was on hole two, which you could see from the clubhouse. It just was like, oh, this is going to be perfect. So I go into the clubhouse, and I say to the guy, I said, hey, I'm a single. Can I get on? He goes, absolutely. So he rings up the thing, and I go, yeah, and I need some, I'm going to need some golf balls too. Cause I was down to like three, and I know I need more than that. So he goes, yeah, anything? And I go, yeah, you know, I'll take a sleeve of some, you know, maybe some Titleists over there. So naturally he pulls out, he gets me a sleeve of Pro V1X, which are the high end tour professional golf balls that are expensive. And I didn't, felt like I should have immediately said, oh, no. Get me the cheaper ones, the ones you give the hacks that come in here. Give me, because I haven't played in 2 years. I was like, I know I'm gonna lose these the second you give them to me. I mean, you might as well throw them in the woods now. That's where they're heading. So he just grabs the sleeve, he puts it down, and instead I just bought them. They were like $15 for three golf balls or something like that. And I bought them, and because I was too embarrassed to go, these are too expensive.
I would have been completely fine saying, you know what, I don't really need to throw these balls in the lake.
Yeah, I mean, so I mean,
for me, any time there's a water hazard, I'll find it.
Oh, no kidding. No, so
without a doubt.
So this is so anyway, I got these really expensive golf balls that I absolutely didn't want. And I had some golf balls in the bag. Now, the balls I have in the bag, I don't care if I lose, right? They're
right.
Old. If I lose them, right. I knew I would lose them immediately. It's not the easiest course in the world. It's not the hardest, but it was kind of woodsy. So I knew I was going to spray the ball a little bit. So these balls I was protecting like they were golden eggs. Like I wasn't going to use them. I was like, I can't use these golf balls. So I got down. I finally had to break one out. So I had a shot. Now here's where this is when you know you are just thinking about the price of something too much. So I had my drive and it was over on the right side and was kind of in the woods and it wasn't quite there and I knew it landed safe and I found it and it was nice. And I was trying to hit a shot on a par five. I was going to hit this shot, second shot, to give me a good shot for a third. And there was a wide open field over across the way. And I was like, I'm going to hit it over there so I can hit it onto the green. And one of the few times in the day, Ron, that I nailed this shot perfectly. It was a 4-iron, ball rose up like a rocket, went straight as an arrow, went over to the field and landed. So I was pretty pumped up because not only that, I hit it pretty far. So I go over to that area. I'm driving around the golf cart and I can't find it. Okay. I can't find it anywhere. I saw it land and I can't find it. So I drove around and I drove around and I drove around. I must have taken, now luckily there was nobody behind me and there was nobody in the course. I must have taken 15 minutes to find this golf ball. I was, now a lot of times in that situation, because my balls, you know, the balls I play with are cheap and they're plentiful. I usually just throw one down. I just move on. I go, all right, whatever. It got lost in maybe some grass, or maybe I'm in the wrong location, or maybe I'm just missing it. I don't know where it is. It seemed like it should be here. Seems like it should be in short grass. It seems there's no trees around here. Where is it? I can't find it. Who cares? Grab another one, throw it down, you know, a scuffed up top flight or something like that, and play that. I wouldn't leave. I would not leave until I found it. I went over and over and over that area. I could not. I had to find it. I was like, these are $4 a piece, for crying out loud. And I did. I found it. And I was so thankful.
Was it in a good spot?
It was in a pretty good spot. Yeah, it was a pretty good spot. Luckily,
that's what acquiring minds want to know. Were you selling yourself short looking for, like, there's no way it could be further down the...
Oh, no, I did that, though. No, I played that game where I was like, do I really want to go up further? Is it really... Did I really knock it that far? Like, I thought it was in a particular, you know, relatively normal location. But, man, that bothered me the whole round with these golf balls. I was like, I ain't getting rid of these. I ended up losing one, so I still have two in the bag. But, oh, God. At one point, I found another ball in the rough, and I used that one before I used the brand new the Titleist balls. I found like an old Callaway that was in like the rough, and I was like, "Well, I'm using this one."
Well,
are you kidding me?
You didn't take someone's ball, right?
No. Right, like, yeah, I told you, this course was dead empty. I mean, I didn't see. I saw two people early, and they must have left because I never saw them again.
See that? I need that. Because I need to have the ability to really just take my time and milk the clock, if you will.
Oh, no, man. Do you know what I loved about it? I got to play a couple holes twice. Like, I played one hole, and I was like, I'm going back and play it again. I mean, I went back and forth. I was all over the place. I loved it. But, God, I can't believe these golf balls are that expensive. I was like, oh, no, okay, I'll take it.
I was waiting for the hook of the story for you to come out and go, yeah, I bought these balls, and you know what? I played so much better.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Man.
Yeah, right. All of a sudden, I was...
For all of a sudden, I felt like I was Tiger Woods.
I did. You know what? No, nothing's more boring than somebody telling their golf stories, but I'm going to tell this golf story real quick. I did make a birdie draining like a 30, 40 foot putt, and it was complete luck.
It was.
I didn't even take the flag.
It was all
out.
Ball.
No, and then I and then I yelled. Like, I'm by myself, and I yelled, was a little embarrassing.
Did you fist pump?
Yeah, I did.
Did you run up to the hole, pointing at the hole the entire time?
Oh, I wanted to. I should have. Well, I should have because it was this really long putt, and I didn't even take the flag out. I just went up there. I was like, I'm going to just try to hit it close. And then when I was it was tracking towards the hole. I'm like, hey, man, it's got a chance. Oh my God, that's got a real good chance. And then it went in, and I yelled, and I looked around. And I was like, there's nobody here. What am I? If I made a hole in one yesterday, I wouldn't be able to sell it. I wouldn't be able. Nobody saw. Nobody was around.
You could lie. You could.
I could.
You could go total fisherman on us and just lie about it.
I could have walked into the clubhouse and bought everybody drinks.
Yeah.
And I said, but then they were like, "Oh, you make a hole in one? Yeah. Well, who saw it? Nobody. Well, yeah, it doesn't count.
You know what? The problem is, you would have bought everyone drinks, but you spent all your money on balls.
I would have. I could have. You know what? That's a good point. I could have walked into the clubhouse and said, "You know what? I would have bought everybody here a beer, except that guy over there. When I asked for just some golf balls, gave me the most expensive golf ball. In the rack. Yeah.
It's like, honestly, well, I came in looking for used drive range balls.
Right.
So that's what I was hoping for.
Here's
game level.
A lesson to all of you who may be in the same predicament as I, just grab the ones that are in the big, if your course has them, the big bowl. Right? Yeah, they have this gigantic bowl. Yep. Like, grab five for a dollar or whatever it is. Grab those. Don't. You know, unless you're really playing and playing well and swinging good, don't get the expensive.
Yeah, I'm not sure how it started or why it started, but my grandfather golfed a lot, and he would take me and my cousin out a lot when we were younger. I mean, we had no business. I mean, we were teenagers. We were just excited to drive a golf cart and see what we could do with the golf cart.
Right.
But in his garage, he must have had. I'm probably underselling it. At least 500 golf balls.
Wow! Just finding them and leaving them around.
I think so. I mean, he was a little bit of a cheapskate, so I think at times. I mean, and some of them look like driving range balls, but a lot of times he would just. I mean, if he was cruising around the course and he saw that, you know, oh, this ball looked like it was hidden under a few leaves, but the wind blew and exposed the ball once again, or. You know, if he was by a water hazard, it was like, oh, you know, this ball's not too far. You can reach it with the golf club. I don't know why anybody left it there. He must have just been doing this for years.
Yeah.
He had buckets and buckets of golf balls. And so that was great. Like, when I finally really got into it and started thinking about it, he's like, oh, yeah, go out there, just take a handful. I mean, they're not good.
Yeah, sure, but at least they're golf balls.
At least they're golf balls. So, I mean, I have, like, I have a bag just, like, probably there's, like, 30 balls in there. And I don't know why. I mean, I probably will never use all 30.
Oh, you know, there was a country club in Colorado that we lived down the road from. There was a private course, and there was this public course. And the private course was very, very, you know, ritzy.
Right.
And I knew kids would walk around that golf course and they would find golf balls in the woods and different places. But what the balls that they would find there were the expensive Pro V1s, like whatever these rich guys would play. And so they would be selling these expensive golf balls for, you know, $1 a piece, $2 a piece, whatever it was. And, you know, probably more like a buck and making a fortune because they would find them. People wanted those.
How long do you think those guys spent looking for their Pro V1s?
Oh, right. Exactly.
I lost the ball. Oh, just grab another one out of the bag.
Hit one in the woods. Oh, there goes $4. My God. I just lost $4 in one swing. Give me a break. Golf is so expensive.
Yeah.
It's amazing it survives. It's amazing. It really is.
I always say this. The reason why it survives is because everyone's had that one shot that makes them think they could have been on the PGA Tour.
No kidding.
And that's what keeps drawing you back.
You know how I know I could never make it on the PGA Tour? Because when those guys hit those shots, you know those shots where you see like Tiger or Spieth or whatever? They're like over on the side by the gallery and they're like, oh, can you move, please? Move. But they don't make a move like 75 yards. They just go, no, just give me a small tunnel. That's all I need.
Right.
Like, I'm just going to hit this shot, but you don't have to go that far. Just move out of my way, but just give me this narrow, narrow strip of land and air. That's all I need. Yeah,
basically,
that's it.
What they're saying is, you know, you on the left side, put your right arm out. You on the right side, put your left arm out. Your fingers are touching. Now drop them.
Yeah, okay, now drop them, and that's all I need.
That's all I need.
That's it. So you guys just stand tight and don't worry about it. Because the idea of me shanking this shot and hitting you in the head is almost nil. This will not happen.
I mean,
this will not happen.
And if that's you or I out there, you know, that's a trust exercise.
Oh, no kidding. I would kill somebody if I did that. Like, if I ever got in one of those, hey, you want to play in this pro-am tournament thing? Like, and I'd go, hey, sure, why not? Don't do that for me. If I'm on the side and the gallery wants to follow the guy I'm playing with, the pro I'm playing with, you better be moving away from my shot, because it'll go right to your head.
Or if you do have that situation occur to you right now, you're hitting that ball so soft and so weak that you know that you will have to pull down your skirt a little bit.
Exactly. And these pros wind up and smash it and have no doubt. They have no doubt that it's gonna go straight and no one's getting hurt.
Well, what's that?
No question. It's not even in their head.
The video of, like, there's a guy, like, standing, like, I want to say, like, a foot away from Phil Mickelson, and he chips it over the person's body.
Yeah.
It's like,
and Mickelson's like, of course, that's exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah, easy.
I'm not going to hurt you at all. Don't even think about it. I'm not even going to come close.
Even in that situation, my back is turned.
I know. Why can I do it? I can't do it. It's so crazy. All right. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, if you want to comment. We'll get to the NBA playoffs from last night. Giannis's big game. What does this mean for the Celtics? And also, is the Warriors situation more daunting for the Rockets, given that they didn't even play well last night? Next on SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, doing a repair that needs a special tool? O'Reilly Auto Parts makes it easy with the Loaner Tool Program. Over 80 specialized loaner tools are available, and they're sure to have the tool in stock to help you get the job done. Purchase the needed parts and put down a deposit on the loaner tool. Return the tool in the original condition and receive a full refund. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. Milwaukee with a victory last night over the Celtics that is evened up at a game apiece. If you're wondering about the Celtics and Bruins, because yesterday we had Dan Shaughnessy on from the Boston Globe about the possible grand slam of sports championships. The Bruins lost last night, too. Celtics a little bit more daunting now in their quest to knock off Milwaukee, because what worked for them in game one and for the first half of game two is not going to work now if Milwaukee can extend their defense and hit their outside shots, which they did, and Giannis somehow untangled the defensive strategy of Al Horford and company. Boy, Giannis looked great in that third quarter. He really did. But nevertheless, we'll see how the Celtics will respond on home court, because that's usually the key in the NBA. Not so much in the NHL. I agreed with Dan Shaughnessy yesterday. It doesn't seem to matter as much in the NHL home ice, but home court advantage is a big deal.
All right, but I had this thought early this morning. Or it was last night. I don't know. One of the two. But say the Bruins go ahead and they win it all.
Right.
Right. And so you have three of your professional sports teams that have won national champ or won the championship. How do people react to the Celtics? Not, you know, if they don't finish it out.
Ah, that's a good question.
Because
that's a good question.
Because, I mean, if the Bruins don't win it all, no one's really going to care. It's, you know, it's hockey. I mean, you know, you're not.
It doesn't get the same kind of love.
Yeah.
It's so sad, too, because the Stanley Cup is a great trophy.
Oh,
It's probably the best trophy in sports.
Yeah, it just keeps traveling keeps having, you know, it's the same trophy that's been handed out year after year after year.
Do you think Canada is really angry that, because the last time a Canadian team won the Stanley Cup was 93? Do you think they get ticked off when the Stanley Cup is going to places like Tampa and Anaheim and Dallas and these other places? And they're like,
almost
wait a minute, they don't even care. Carolina won it one year. Like, wait a minute, what's going on? why are these Florida teams and the Avalanche? I'll never forget a friend what my friend told me when I got to Colorado. So I got to Colorado after they won their second Stanley Cup. Right after they won their second Stanley Cup, I think they beat the Devils. And a friend of mine who's from New York, he was living in Denver at the time. He's kind of given me the lay of the land of Colorado sports. He'd been there a while, but he was from New York. And he said to me, he goes, man, people here, he goes, they do not understand how hard it is to win the Stanley Cup. They think it's just something you get every year. He goes, they just don't get it. In Quebec, the Avalanche used to be the Quebec Nordiques. They would have killed for a Stanley Cup. Are you kidding? And then they watched a Colorado team win it twice with their old players. It must have drove them crazy. But when that Stanley Cup is in sun cities like L.A., Anaheim, Tampa, Carolina, I mean, it was going to NASCAR races for crying out loud. Dallas, it must drive them nuts. It must drive them crazy to watch Americans like, eh, it's a cup. Look at this thing. It's awesome. Look at this. This is fun. And meanwhile, they're like, we haven't seen that Stanley Cup in 30 years. What's wrong with us? But nevertheless, if Boston wins the cup, the Boston fans will give the Celtics a little bit of grief. I remember 86. 86 was the year that the Patriots went to the Super Bowl. The Red yep. Sox went to the World Series.
Yep.
The Celtics won the NBA championship. And I remember there used to be T-shirts that say, come on, Bruins, get your act together. Like it was just, that was one of those things.
So, but they didn't mention the fact that the Patriots and Red Sox historically flamed out?
No, they just was like, hey, we're just glad to be here.
Because yeah, with the Patriots that year, that was, for me, that was the first major blowout I saw in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that was a bad, that was because a bad even, I mean, loss.
Because that score line, what was it? It was like 46.
46 to 10.
Yeah. It was much worse than that.
Oh, it was.
Like the Patriots Bears held back.
Patriots got like a late touchdown, and they were the only team to score a touchdown against the Bears the entire postseason.
Yeah. It was that scary.
But Steve, like Tony Eason got knocked out of the game. Steve Grogan came in to play. Bears manhandled them. That's why Walter Payton was so ticked off that he didn't get a touchdown in that Super Bowl. Everybody was getting touchdowns in the Super Bowl. They let Fridge get a touchdown in the Super Bowl. See, that's like everybody was having their fun.
You know, if Fridge didn't get a touchdown, you know, maybe Walter was like, it just didn't work out. But the fact that they handed the ball off to the Fridge and, you know, Payton's sitting there going, God, I'm the greatest running back ever. I didn't even get that.
I know. I'm the greatest running back ever. I'm the greatest running back ever. And they didn't give him one.
But
it's so sad.
I just couldn't escape that feeling. Like, you know, if the Bruins win at all, you got three of the four major sports winning in Boston. I mean, you know, Title Town moniker is secured. But where does that put the Celtics? The Celtics just look like dogs then at that point. Like, God, you know, maybe they come out with that T-shirt that, you know, Celtics, get your act together.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I agree with you. I think the Celtics, last night had me worried about the Celtics' chances against the Bucks because it looked like one of those situations where the Bucks went, okay, yeah, this is how we do this now. Yeah. I get it.
I remember.
Because Giannis all of a sudden went, wait a minute, hold on, I can actually score now. And then the Bucks went, Mike Budenholzer did a great job of like, they're going to start hitting threes. And that was basically it. Brad Stevens knew his team didn't play very well. Kyrie played terrible last night. Now, again, you bounce back at home, do all that. Good for you. You know, hope it works. You know, hope you do it, make the series. But last night was a wake up call for Milwaukee. They went, okay. They scored 39 points in the third quarter.
Yeah. No, that was the game that they needed to get back. And
yeah, they did. They couldn't lose both games at home.
And aside from Warriors, Rockets, I mean, this is going to be an entertaining series. This has the makings to be, an Eastern Conference Finals if the Celtics have gotten their act together throughout the year.
And I'm looking at Toronto, Philadelphia, and that looks like it could be a pretty good series too. But I think Milwaukee and Boston had the better, you know, had the better look. But who knows? I mean, we'll see. But either way, whoever comes out of the East, I'll like them. But because LeBron was dominant so much, I keep thinking you need a LeBron to just compete with the Warriors or whoever's coming out. And as good as Giannis is, as good as Kawhi is, Kyrie is, nobody's LeBron. So I have no faith that the Eastern Conference has closed the gap. So That is at least that. All right, coming up next, we'll talk a little bit more about the Tyreek Hill situation. That's next on SB Nation AM.
SB Nation AM continues now on SB Nation Radio. Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
So I made the radio faux pas. We do the good, the bad, and the dumb here. And I wouldn't want to miss this because I'm sure we have some really good. And I think we have some pretty good dumb. So what is the good for this Wednesday morning?
The good for today is this high school kid coming out of Texas. I want to get the school right. Strake Jesuit. It's a college preparatory school. Anyways, okay. What makes this story good is that he was, he was competing in the state championships. He ran the 100 meters. And his time in the 100 meters would have put him seventh at the 2016 Olympics.
Oh, really?
He ran a 9.98.
Really? Wow, that's incredible.
He was flying. And I just, you know,
good for him.
We don't talk track and field ever. So
yeah,
I saw this and I was like, oh, we're going to talk track. We're going to give, his name is Matthew Bowling. We're going to give Matthew Bowling a little love today. 9.98. And it would have put him at seventh place in the 2016 Olympics. Overall.
Hey, I mean, that's awesome. You know, good for him. That is a really good.
Going, he would have been, you know, neck and neck with the likes of like Usain Bolt or Justin Gatlin.
That's impressive. No, that really is impressive. Well done.
Blew my mind when I saw that. I was like, wow.
You know, now that's a really good.
The funny thing was, SportsCenter was showing a clip of it yesterday, and I caught it, and I'm like, why are they showing track and field? It didn't make any sense to me, and they were running it backwards pretty much, or like, you know, they were running it the opposite direction that they normally would run.
Right.
You know, which just seemed, I was like, oh, maybe that's why they're doing it backwards. And maybe that was a mistake. Maybe it's, you know, part of the not top 10 of the week or something. I don't know. But then, you know, I read more into the story. I was like, okay, all right, we got an actual runner. Only a high school kid. He hasn't even matured yet. Committed to the University of Georgia.
Oh, good. Good for him.
So University of Georgia, going to definitely be getting some love.
So he must win everything that he competes in.
He has to.
Like, if he's that fast.
Close.
Because I always, my kid does track and field, right? He does a number of events, and I always go, hey, have you ever been at one of these meets where somebody's like, man, that's like Olympic time? And he said once in New Jersey, there was a guy that was a senior that ran something really fast, and that people were saying, boy, that could have qualified him for the Olympic team in that capacity. But I'm always curious because that's the one sport you can compare.
Yeah,
right. Like 100 meters is 100 meters, right? I mean,
I kid you not. It was, you watch the race and he is, I mean, from the get go, you know, the first 10 meters, it looks like, you know, okay, this is going to be a competitive race. From that moment on, he turns it on and he is just light years ahead of everyone.
That's amazing. That is awesome. That is great.
What it reminds me of, it's like that one race where Usain Bolt turned and looked at the camera. You know, except he kept running hard. Now, there was a good battle for second and third. You know, but those guys were probably, what, 0.2 seconds off of his.
Yeah.
Which is a huge amount of time in the 100 meters.
This is really cool because when you're like a good baseball player, like a really good baseball player, they could still make the argument, yeah, but when he gets to the pros, you know, we'll see if he can hit the curveball. Right, it's the same in golf, right? If you're a really good high school golfer, yeah, but when you play the courses, the length of the courses, the PGA courses, we'll see. But when you run track, it's the same thing. You can compare yourself to Usain Bolt.
You can.
There's no special track at the Olympics that they use rather than – it's a track. A track's a track. 100 meters is 100 meters.
Yeah.
So if you run a 9.97, that's how you can compare yourself to some of the best in the world.
Well, I mean, and the way you look at this is, you know, comparing it to, say, the 2016 Olympics. I mean, he was literally 0.4 seconds behind Usain Bolt.
That's fantastic. That's unbelievable.
That's huge. And he's a high school kid. He's 17, maybe 18. That's it.
This should be a bigger story.
It should be
a bigger story, but it's track and field. We don't care about the European stuff.
I just sent you a link to the video, so you'll have to check it out.
All right, so what is the bad?
The bad of the day. I actually have two.
Okay.
I have two bads. One's just bad, and the other one's scary bad. The just bad one is the Game of Thrones cinematographer, Fabian. I'm going to give him a German-sounding name, Fabian Wagner. Or Wagner. But it's Wagner. He pretty much is calling everyone poor and dumb for complaining about how dark the Battle of Winterfell was.
No, he's poor and dumb for not making that so it's well-lit enough for me to see what was going on.
His issue is that a lot of the problem is that a lot of people don't know how to tune their TVs properly.
Oh, stop with that nonsense.
And a lot of people, unfortunately, watch it on small iPads.
Oh, this is an argument that I've heard. I've heard this argument where people got it worse when they were on the iPad watching it on HBO Go.
I had to bring it up because that, to me, you know, I'm new to the whole Game of Thrones thing. I'm doing it unconventional where I'm watching the current season just so I feel, you know, cool. You know, I want to be part of the cool kids and, you know, and be able to tweet about my Game of Thrones thoughts, even though I have none.
Right,
but I'm also watching the series as I go along. You know, watching it. It's like, you know, I'm ashamed that I never got into it. I was a big fan of Lord of the Rings, and this is like Lord of the Rings a little bit on steroids.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
it is.
This is a Lord of the Rings that I can't watch with my kids. But looking back at that battle scene, and I'm going to put it in comparison to this, and I'm not giving any spoilers away because everyone knows that there's going to be a big battle in Avengers Endgame. But you watch, I saw the Battle of Winterfell first, and then I saw the battle in Avengers Endgame. You can clearly see everything that's going on in Endgame.
Yeah.
Without a doubt, you know who's who, and it's chaotic. It really is chaotic, and with the Battle of Winterfell, I couldn't tell I couldn't tell which dragon was which.
No, it was awful.
And you
it
only
was
had
awful.
Three to choose.
It was atrocious. One of the commentators I heard said that they filmed it through a potato. It was bad. He is dumb because what did he say? People
don't know how to tune their TVs
tune
properly.
Their TVs properly. Goodness gracious. This isn't 1980s 3D where you bought the glasses at the 7-Eleven and they were like, now turn the contrast this way and turn. Right. No. I have a high definition television. I have an expensive television. I was supposed to see that crystal clear. You were supposed to make that happen for me and you didn't. And it was awful. And you should be ashamed of yourself. Well, you failed at your job. Just admit it and move on.
I mean, at first, when I was first watching, I'm like, all right, they're keeping it dark because I think they want to convey that feeling of, you know, how frightening this is. How you can't see and it's pitch black. And then, you know, or, you know, when the battle scene actually happens, how chaotic battle scenes are. You really don't know where. And I was getting that artistic approach. But then after a while, you're like, okay, I just want to know, is this guy still alive? Is that guy still alive? I can't really tell who's alive, who's winning. You know, I mean, is that tall giant of a lady, did she survive? Is she okay? You know, Brienne,
yeah.
You know,
she made it.
Are we sure?
I don't know. That's a good point. I'm not 100% sure.
So, yeah, that's just bad. The scary bad of the day, and you're going to be right up this alley. Maybe even your wife will be into this as well. But there's a bunch of scientists from all around the world who are meeting coming up shortly. They're meeting soon to discuss how to stop a giant space rock that could kill us all.
Wait a minute. When is this happening?
It's a hypothetical. There isn't really a giant space rock.
By the way, I don't want to sound like I was excited that we were all going to die from a space rock.
Well, I thought you were getting excited like, oh my God, you know, I haven't finished everything on my bucket list yet.
Right. No, yeah.
No, they're just meeting to kind of figure out like what would we do if a 65-foot asteroid appeared out of nowhere. And the whole reason behind this, it used to be, I guess it was like a laughable concept, but remember that that meteor that flew over Siberia or Russia or whatever? Like four years ago now, that came out of nowhere. They didn't really see that coming at all.
Man.
Then all of a sudden there's just this gigantic fireball that's blasting out windows and buildings hundreds of miles, 100-mile radius.
And we need Morgan Freeman as president.
We do, but
he'll build a series of caves
where the scary dumb comes from. And this will actually occur in 2022. NASA plans to test this idea out on a real asteroid that's 492 feet across. So, I mean, a decent size space rock, right?
Yep.
They are going with the DART mission, which is a double asteroid redirection test.
Oh, so they're going to try to deflect it and bounce it off the atmosphere or something?
Basically, it's like they're going to drive like a cosmic bumper car.
Oh, God.
Don't we know that that doesn't work?
No, that doesn't work.
I mean, movies have already proved that, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's not going to work. Remember when in Deep Impact, the other one that was not the Armageddon one, they actually blew up a nuclear missile. I'm sorry, a nuclear bomb in the asteroid, and it just split in two, and it was still heading towards Earth.
Yep.
I remember Taya Leone came on TV, and she was basically telling everybody how it failed, and now just kiss your loved ones because it's all coming to an end.
It's all ending.
I remember watching both of those movies thinking this is a horrific way to go. Like the idea of like the blackened, you know, clouds, no sun, vegetation dies, you know, basically anarchy would be awful.
Well, the other thing that makes it horrific is just the fact that, you know, once it becomes common knowledge, because I do believe, like, you know, with Deep Impact and Armageddon, where they're like, oh, you know, the only 9 satellites can detect it. We control 8. And, you know, they can keep all that stuff hush-hush. They'll know way, way in advance, and they won't tell anybody. But for us, we'll find out. We might have, like, a week.
Right.
You know, yeah. It's like, okay.
Well, the billionaires of the world will get advance notice, and they'll be put into a special cave.
Exactly.
That's exactly right. All right, so the dumb of the day.
The dumb of the day is Samsung is introducing the Sero. That's S-E-R-O, a 43-inch TV that was designed with the millennial generation in mind because it can pivot horizontal to vertical.
The TV can do that?
Yes, but why do we need a vertical TV?
Yeah, why do you need a vertical TV? The phone I get, but why do you need the vertical TV?
I guess so you have like a 43-inch phone?
Oh, God, these people.
I mean...
New millennials out there, I don't know why the world caters to you.
That's what I was thinking. I don't know why. I'm trying to think of like what the point would be to have a 43-inch screen TV going vertical.
Yeah, exactly. So you can rent food and then watch your television vertically like you do on your phone. Does anybody watch videos on their phone vertically?
No.
Like, whenever I go to YouTube on my phone, I always flip it horizontally.
Yeah, and don't we always complain when somebody shot it vertically? You're like, come on, we hate that.
Yeah, we don't like that.
Because then all of a sudden you have the space, it's still smaller. It's like, oh, that's annoying.
Yeah, no. We want it. Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, absolutely.
We all know to turn our phones horizontal.
How much does this TV cost? Does it say?
Oh, it doesn't say yet.
Oh, okay.
It'll be too much.
Exactly. Yeah, no, caters too much. Millennials, you get catered too much.
I don't get. There's just no point in having a vertical TV. Listen, can you imagine? I mean, first of all, you know, if you're not mounting it on your wall, it's just going to look weird. Just sitting in your living room,
exactly,
standing up and down. Forget about it. For me, I have this huge like entertainment cabinet. It's like I wouldn't be able to put it anywhere.
Yeah, exactly. Listen, guys, I know you don't like hearing us say, like, well, my day we only had 3 channels. I get it. You roll your eyes. We all did that to generations before us.
We only have horizontal screens.
Exactly. But that think about what you're going to tell your grandkids when you're older. Like, well, back in my day, we only had 2 ways to watch TV, horizontal and vertical. Now you guys are doing it sideways and angles and 35, 45 degrees and backwards and upside down.
Yep, back in my day,
we only had 2, vertical and horizontal. Yeah. And my grandfather, he only had it 1 way. It was a big old box.
Okay, just real quick. I mean, you know, maybe this is a conversation for another time, but how soon do we have a sitcom shot in VR?
Good point. Yeah.
You know, because, I mean, 3D was pretty amazing technology. But now when you see these virtual realities, it's like, okay, how soon are we just all going to be wearing goggles and a sitcom or a TV show or a movie is going to be shot in VR so it makes you feel like you're in the middle of it all?
Yeah, that's very true.
If no one has thought of that, I claim it.
Claim it. Make that happen. Make that happen. All right, that's the good, the bad, the dumb here on a Wednesday, SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Thanks for joining us, SB Nation AM, SB Nation Radio. Boy, this snuck on me quick. The Kentucky Derby is Saturday. Listen, I'm not a horse racing aficionado, but I love these the Triple Crown races.
Doesn't it feel like they're usually more hype though?
Yeah, completely. I don't know why it snuck up on me. Usually, NBC, for example, does an outstanding job of letting you know they've got 7 hours of Derby coverage coming up on Saturday. I mean, they usually have like a 4 hour pregame show. It's unreal. Like the race is 2.5 minutes and they will be on the air because I guess there's an audience for that. People like hearing the stories of the jockeys and the horses, the trainers. They do these feature pieces. People eat that up. Horse racing used to be a king sport in this country. It used to be a really, really big deal. Not so much anymore, but the Derby still brings in a gigantic crowd to Louisville, over 100,000. They're all dressed in hats, drinking mint juleps. Listen, I know that when American Pharoah won the Triple Crown, it lost, maybe the horse racing lost a little bit of its luster because people really did want to see a Triple Crown and they finally did. But it's still a great, spectacular sport. It's still one of the traditions of May. It just snuck up on me really quick. So that's going to go on this weekend at Churchill Downs in Louisville. All right, it is SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM, coming up next hour. We'll hear what Tyrann Mathieu had to say about the Tyreek Hill situation. He was on with our own Alex Gold. We'll hear that coming up next hour.